You're listening to Movie Sucktastic.
I do not have a vagina. And he does not have a penis.
Don't have genitals.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. I have
Oh, and that's our cue. Alrighty.
Cue balls, what?
Cue balls. Man, we are just slinging these episodes out.
Slinging like hash.
It's what we do.
Like
it's what, Oscars, what Oscars, we right? do during Oscar time.
And shrug this shit off. Moving on. Next victim.
You know what would be funny?
Oh, welcome to Movie Sucktastic. By the way,
I bet we could do it if we really wanted to. Just
do what?
Do all 10 reviews in one day.
Oh, yeah. We didn't have like jobs and shit. Yeah. We'd be
well,
doing
no.
It, non-stop.
It would have to be, we'd have to do it on a Saturday or a Sunday. And we would just have to set aside 5 hours. Just each episode's 30 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, we finally got to a point where one episode is not like 5 hours. So, you know, we're working on it.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I'm working on our new website. I have to go and add, each episode one by one to the site. So I'm looking at all the different lengths of the episodes because that has to be added into the HTML and the JavaScript that I'm doing for the site. Mm-hmm. We were able to, for the most part, keep our episodes, in the beginning, we were getting a little out of hand. It's like 2 hours, 2.5 hours, 2 hours, 40 minutes. But then we kind of dialed it back a bit. Our average episode length is probably an hour.
And those longer episodes are back when we would do things like, all right, we're just going to talk zombies this episode.
Well, you know, back in the beginning, when we first started this thing,
We just threw movies out.
It was definitely that. But what it really was is you lived, you know, upwards of an hour away from me. You would come to my house and I would go to your house and we would record 3, 4, 5 episodes at a clip because we knew we weren't going to be able to get together for another month or so.
Yeah.
Speaking
of long episodes.
I know, we're trying. I'm sorry.
So, welcome to Movie Sucktastic. I'm Scott. The one waxing nostalgic there is Joey.
Hi.
And today we're reviewing The Holdovers.
Yes, an Alexander Payne film, which doesn't take place in Nebraska.
Aww.
Well, you know, Alexander Payne, and I didn't look anything up, so I have no idea. But when he makes his films, in some way, shape, or form, it's personal to him, you know, in some small way. It could be a lot. It could be a little. It could be the fact that it takes place in Nebraska. It could be a character. You know, it's somebody that he came in, came across as he was,
you find
like,
that with
up.
Most artists.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't know, but it's possible that he went to a school like this or went to a school in the New England area. Who knows? I don't know. But it seems... Every time he makes a movie, it is personal, or a little bit, at least, in some way, shape, or form.
The Holdovers is definitely a nostalgic throwback to 70s, 80s, 70s, obviously.
Yeah, this takes place in 1970.
Right. I'm thinking, like, film styles, but every time I think 80s is because, like, the 70s, this kind of film style from the 70s bled into the 80s. A bit. But this is very reminiscent of films like, I think Ordinary People is the one that keeps jumping to mind, personally.
Yeah. I love the way the film looks, too. Even from the opening titles. I mean, it, like, even when it opened up, it was the old Universal logo, you know, that they've been using for forever.
I put them in the slideshow.
Yeah, they were great. But it was that. It was just like, you know, R rating by the MPAA. Like, all of that was old film stock. And even when it goes to his room, and at the bottom it has the Roman numerals for the year, which I believe those Roman numerals were 1971. I thought you might have had a freeze frame of it, and I was going to go back and look at it, but I'm pretty sure it's 1971 because the film begins in 1970 and ends in 1971. So I have a feeling that's why it said 1971, because the film is, you know, it's an ongoing story, and then when it ends, it ends in the year 1971, because this takes place during Christmas break, between Christmas break and New Year's. So
1971.
Well, why do you do that? Yeah, I'm clearly going somewhere with the fact that he threw up the Roman numerals that it said 1971.
I know. I'm waiting for you to get there.
Wow. All right. This is going to be a quick episode. Anyhow, let's talk about its Oscar nominations, you bastard.
Sure.
The Holdovers, nominated for 5 Oscars. Wow, really? Only 5?
Yeah.
Interestingly enough. 111 wins and 200 nominations total. It is award season. All right. It's up for Best Achievement in Film Editing, Best Original Screenplay, Best Performance by an Actor in a Supporting Role, which is Divine Joy Randolph. She plays Mary. Best Picture, and who I believe is probably the front runner, Paul Giamatti, for Best Actor. I really hope he wins. I really do.
I wouldn't complain. I mean, I like Jeffrey Wright for it, too, but I wouldn't complain if he
won. I like Paul Giamatti more.
Who doesn't?
I'd love Paul Giamatti. Oh, man, there's that dislocated shoulder shot.
Oh, man. Yeah, every scene is a picture. Every scene is like you could take a picture, and this, like, it would have a memory.
Yeah,
I feel like that's really how a lot of this was directed. I feel. I mean,
I'm surprised it didn't get nominated for cinematography because of that. I mean, I get the film editing portion of it, even though this isn't a very fast moving film. But I think, I don't know. I think if you nominated for editing, cinematography should have been there somewhere.
I don't know how they split the hairs on that. I'm not going to get into that.
It did end up for cinematography.
Yeah. I mean, but so the Holdovers is basically about it focuses on Paul Giamatti's character is the main character. Paul Hunnam. I forget how they pronounce it.
It's Hunnam.
Hunnam. He's a professor at this boys' academy high school,
Barton.
And he ends up because he's not giving good grades to delinquent rich kids. He's punished by having to stay with kids who don't have anybody to take them for the holiday.
Right. Hence the term the Holdovers.
Right. And so yeah, these are people that
the film starts out with him sitting with the dean and talking about how he failed one of the a congressman's son, and he said, well, yeah, he was really bad student, so yeah, I failed him. And he's constantly hearing about it, and for him, he's like, listen, if you're not going to try, I'm going to fail you, this is what's going to happen. So throughout the film, you hear about it a couple of times, and it's just the way he is, you know? You can tell that there's that one great line, and I think you screen capped it, where he's, I'm paraphrasing because I don't remember it exactly, he goes, the world, what is it, what did he say, the world?
Many people find the world like a hen house ladder, short and shitty.
That's not the one I was thinking of. It was the one where,
God damn it,
it's like the world is complicated.
Oh,
and
I find the world a bitter and complicated place, and it seems to feel the same way about me.
Yes, and that really sums up his character in this movie.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, he's a very vindictive professor. Everybody hates him, and apparently most of the teachers don't like him either. And he's got a huge chip on his shoulder, it appears. And as we learn more about the character, I mean, jumping to that, you know, the character arc is we eventually find out about his background as well as the other main characters. But for him, it's almost like he spent his whole life taking revenge on these kids because all these privileged kids are getting, you know, just like get life handed to them. And then he was somebody who was capable, but it was taken away from him.
Right. Yeah. I mean, later on in the film, you realize that he was at Harvard. He was mm-hmm. brilliant student, and just he was gonna go places. He was gonna do great things, and with his inability to. He at one point he mentions how he tries to get in the military and he doesn't get in, and obviously it's because of his eyes. They call him Walleye throughout the film because he's got his eyes like one goes in one direction, one goes in the other, and it like mm-hmm. corrects itself every once in a while, but then trails off. Oh, I did see the shot in the liquor store where you had the shot of the clerk where his mm-hmm. eyes are pretty much the exact same way. I don't know if you noticed that.
Mm-hmm.
Where he's like, "Here you go, killer."
Yeah, that's why I took the picture. Yeah.
Now again, I mean, Alexander Payne works in like weird ways. It's like it, was that supposed to mean something? Is that somebody he knew growing up? Who knows? I mean, you don't know. You'd have to.
No, we don't.
Probably read into it quite a bit. It's like that. The guy in the liquor store. It's like someone from Alexander Payne's life way back in the. Who the fuck knows? All I know is the guy is in there for a reason. Alexander Payne just doesn't throw him in there for no reason, even though it's something as little as being a liquor store clerk. So. Why are you giving me this look?
You might be reading a bit too much into it.
I might be. Do I deserve the look for that? What's happening? I've been saying a lot of words.
So his he ends up Professor Paul, or you know, he ends up babysitting this group of privileged rich kids who don't have anywhere to go, mostly because their parents are off jet setting and doing other stuff, or you know. And I mean, the whole obviously the title of the film, The Holdovers, is this whole thing is about people that are kind of isolated. They don't have anybody, or due to circumstances they're left alone and reaching out to other people. I think the film is a great representation of how all kids are fucking little bastards.
Yeah.
And every single one of them, like even the main character, every single one of them, they're except for the two younger ones, but they haven't learned yet because they haven't been abused. But they just, it's just a cycle of abuse. There's just, all that hate just comes out, and I just got to fuck with everybody else that I can. And it's just, yeah. it's one of the closer to real life representations of school I've seen, and I didn't go to school in that time period.
No,
you know, I definitely didn't know to go to that kind of school.
No, that's for sure.
Yeah, but Paul Giamatti, his character and the character of Dominic Sessa, the Angus, they grow a bond through the holiday weekend as they hang out with the cook, Mary Lamb.
Yes. So yeah, and she's also nominated for an Oscar.
Yeah, am I mean in saying that that's one of those, it's an honor to be nominated situations?
I wouldn't say it's mean.
I'm
unless you have a replacement, unless you have a replacement for her nomination for someone else's performance.
I'm not saying she doesn't deserve it. I just feel like the performance overall doesn't blow me away.
I don't think she's going to win. I don't think she's going to win.
I just feel like it's one of those things. Like, yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like there's no way you can win, but it's an honor to be nominated.
Yeah, I mean, she's that's up all. For. all right, Emily Blunt and Oppenheimer.
I mean, she was good.
She was great in it. Emily Blunt and Oppenheimer, Danielle Brooks for The Color Purple, America Ferrera, which I believe is going to be winning the Oscar. Jodie Foster and Naiad, and Divine Joy Randolph for The Holdovers. Now, I think America Ferrera is going to win Best Supporting Actress. So, I don't think her main competition might be Divine Joy Randolph. To be completely honest, I haven't seen any of the other performances other than Emily Blunt's. But
okay,
I mean Emily Blunt had that one great scene in Oppenheimer, but. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know.
Yeah, so the Angus character, he's the rich brat that his mother's on her funny honeymoon, so they can't pick him up and he has to stay there.
Right.
And he's upset because he wants to see his father, and there's this whole mystery about that. Is it fair to say that basically his mother's a bad mother?
Yeah, I think, you know, she couldn't...
I don't think the film's too ambiguous about that. I don't think it leaves too... It gives a little bit of wiggle room there, but I think just by her actions and stuff, I think it's fair to say that the film sees her as the villain of the piece.
Yeah, I...
Okay.
It's a tough situation because his dad... I mean, spoiler alerts, are we doing that?
Yeah, you're an idiot if you're listening to this and haven't seen the film yet.
Don't call our fans idiots.
Well, why would you do that? Hopefully our fans are smart enough not to watch the video before they've seen the film.
Uh-huh. Anyway.
I apologize.
Earlier in the film, he says that his father died because I guess that's one way to cope with what has actually happened.
Well, he's lying. He's known to lie. He makes up stories and lies. He admits it. He's like, I fuck things up. So he's got these compulsions to make up stories, and which he does several times to bail out himself and on him.
Yeah. Yep. That's true.
Yeah.
So his mom, his dad ends up getting sick. Early onset dementia. Schizophrenia, all of that. And his mom, he says his mom took his dad to some doctors and they couldn't do anything. And she just ended up divorcing him and putting him in like a mental institute. And just so that she could get on with her life.
And now she's got a new hubby and they're jet setting.
Right. But the son, he goes on to say that he pretty much is at the school all the time, and she sends him away to these types of schools so that she doesn't have to see him. And
right,
you know, because if she doesn't have to see him, she doesn't have to deal with him, she doesn't have to think of her ex-husband and how that relationship went. I don't want to say you understand, because she's definitely not great, especially towards him.
Well, so. the juxtaposition would be that just like his father, his mother is putting him out of the way.
Right.
And knowing that his father has pretty much just been, you know, isolated because he's not wanted, obviously this kid feels unwanted too. He has no, you know, it's literally being told, you know, shown, you are not wanted. I don't want to spend time with you. I don't want to be around you.
Right.
That's it. So that kind of emotional stress on a teenager, that's just, you know, fucking forget it. Rich or poor, you know, just being told you're not worth it.
Oh, yeah. No, it's...
You know? So whether or not whether or not the father being locked up is not the point, is regardless of that, she's doing the same thing to him, and that's a conscious choice.
Yeah, she probably, right, in some weird narcissistic way feels that she's put up with enough, and she wants freedom. She wants to live her life. So yeah, she's not good. That's another movie, to be honest, if they were going to,
sure,
you know, if
sure,
they were going to delve into that, that is a whole other movie that could happen.
Yeah, and then there's the Mary Lamb character is a little less developed, or a little underdeveloped. The main thing with her, it's just grief over the loss of her husband and then son, both at young ages, and just right. Again, she also feels, and this is part of the film too, where these people kind of discover through each other, they're not dealing with the same thing, but they're kind of dealing with it in the same way by isolating themselves even more and taking comfort in that isolation. Giamatti's character, I mean, at the end, that's why he sacrifices his job to save Angus, is basically because he realizes that he spent his whole life trying to destroy these kids instead of offering any kind of real support, and this is his one chance to do so.
Right.
I mean, above and beyond the point that he has a personal connection now and cares about the kid. You know, I mean, that's obviously his character arc, but they've all been kind of doing that. Mary kind of refusing to spend time with her sister over the holidays. Instead, she's just going to, you know, work in the kitchen and mourn her son. And that, you know, and then you have Angus who's desperately trying to find someone to spend time with him. Nobody wants him.
Yeah. Even the next to last scene in the movie where he's talking to Angus, and, you know, telling him, like, you can do this. And then he was, I was going to tell you the same thing. And then he just starts running in the other direction. Says, see ya. You know, but it was in such a carefree, innocent way where, you know, Paul Giamatti's character, Paul, he's emotional. And he's just, you know, it's the next chapter in his life, whether he likes it or not. Whereas this kid, it's the beginning for him. And the sacrifice, like you said, he did make for him. It's almost like his character, he knows it. Angus's character knows it, but he doesn't know it yet, like for real. You know, as he gets older, he'll probably look back at that situation and realize what really, you know, what was done for
him. Well, sure.
You
know,
so it's you know, I don't know about you, but I loved this film. I thought this was a great film.
Oh yeah. No, Giamatti steals it. Sessa does an excellent job as Angus. I mean, and casting wise, it's a smart cast just to begin with, because as the skinnier, taller. He's skinnier, gangly, so he's not really, like, threatening in any kind of aggressive right. way, which is good because he is a very aggressive when it comes to his bullying aspects. So even though he's not physically imposing, he still towers over Giamatti, still dwarfs him. So that on top of the smell and the eyes and everything makes him, you know, almost like a gnomish type character.
Right, and I mean,
so it's a very important for that dynamic.
Yeah, sorry. And Angus even mentions later he's been kicked out of school so many times that he should be a junior. He's actually just a sophomore. He should actually be a junior because he's been kicked out so many times. He's missed a couple of semesters. So
and of course that's it's, like narrative wise too, that kind of points to the character's stunted growth to be on top of that. So even though we're talking about it in linear terms, it's yeah, emotionally he's still struggling. I do like that they kind of show that even though the one kid he butts heads with a lot, they have enough empathy to show that he's kind of in a similar situation and they're all acting out. So no one's really the bad, even though he's a bigger dick. They're still like, yeah, they're really just assholes just because they're dealing with the situation.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, for sure.
Here's a film where it's about the class struggle. It is. It's more than that, obviously, because this is about individuals just pretty much being shunned by society for whatever reason. For Angus, it's inconvenience. For Hunnam, it's he found a place to hide out. He gave up. He found a small little place to hide and take his revenge. And then, Mary is just flat out in mourning.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, even when she makes them, I think it was the first day, she makes them all food, and Paul Giamatti, he invites her to eat dinner with them, and she just kind of has this look, and she's like, nah, I'm okay. Because she knows that although Paul is welcoming and would genuinely be fine with her eating with them, she knows that the fucking little shits around the table they don't deserve to have her eat at the table with them, you know, because they're all assholes, including even Angus at that moment.
Yeah, true.
To a degree, so.
Yeah. I mean, in the film takes the time to show Angus's soft spots. Like, you know, he helps the one kid with his bedwetting problem, but at the same time he takes his anger out and rubs it in the face of the kid who loses his glove.
Right.
You know, they show the irrational aspects of, you know, dealing with that kind of emotional turmoil, that you're not always acting the way you should or want to. All three characters are dealing with an emotional blockage that they can't get past, and it's to their detriment. Giamatti's character especially, even though his is technically not a happy ending, it really is, because he's been ejected from this cocoon he's hidden himself in his whole life, literally hiding from the world.
Yeah, and it's really, again, you can make another movie. You really could make another movie, a continuation of this film, even if you did it, say, 5 years later. You could really make another film, and I have a feeling that it would be another great movie if they just did this little 5 years later, 10 years later piece, and you could even revisit all of these characters again, and you would...
But let's not.
Love to see it.
But let's not.
No,
let's
Alexander not. Payne doesn't do movies that way. So it's not going to happen. But I'm saying, what I'm getting at is you could. And
well, yeah, because they're rich characters, and the film leaves you actually caring about how their lives go forward. It's all there. I mean, the writing is excellent. It's, you know, there's no reason. I mean, it's obvious that this is a best screenplay nominee, and it's definitely... one of my favorites for it.
Yeah. What's it up against for? It's
wait a minute.
Best original screenplay.
So yeah, I'm looking at the wrong section.
It's up against Anatomy of a Fall, which we haven't seen yet. Maestro, which we have.
No.
May, December, and Past Lives.
Yeah, so Holdovers for the win.
I really think this is going to win Best Original Screenplay.
Anatomy of a Fall will have to blow my fucking socks off to make me vote against the Holdovers for Best Original.
For sure.
Maestro, no contest. Maestro's well written, but no. And then Past Lives, I'm not even going to start. Past Lives was the worst one so far of the year.
I mean, you know, it's 100 pages, 20 pages of them staring at each other.
Really, yeah, that's the weakest one for me so far. That's almost on the finger list. That's borderline.
Yeah. So yeah. What is it up against for Best Picture? It's up against American Fiction.
Everything.
Anatomy of a Fall, Barbie, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Oppenheimer, Past Lives, Poor Things, and Zone of Interest. What do you think are its chances of winning Best Picture?
No.
No, right?
No, I think...
As much as I love this film, I just don't think it has the gusto
honestly,
to get the votes. Do I think it could be a Best Picture? Sure. I just don't think it'll get the votes.
I think it's just as likely as American Fiction, which is not likely. I think they're both good films, and I think they're both important films. I think they both actually speak to something real that touches at least me,
right,
in a way that tickles me. But I don't think either is going to win Best Picture, and I honestly don't think either would make top five if it was a five thing category.
Well, you know how Best Directing is how I always sum up. If the directors there are nominated, odds are their film is nominated. And The Holdovers is not in that list. Alexander Payne did not get nominated for Best Director. So
Joey approves.
Well, I'm just saying you're right. It's not in. It's not. It wouldn't have been one of the five.
I'm right, but for your reason.
Yes.
Yeah.
Enjoy it.
I'll try.
Enjoy, good sir.
Now, we rated American Fiction, and I paired these two just because they both seem to be kind of a class thing. At least, you know, I mean, both rich people's problems. But the great thing is they're not really about rich people problems. It just almost seems that way from the trailers and the settings and all that.
Yeah.
So I was happily surprised about that, and I feel like they really gelled together because they're both about like how the world treats like the individual versus the world, I guess I may be simplifying it, but I really felt a common bond between these two films.
Oh, for sure.
And we rated America, and the reason I went through that babbling list was because we rated American Fiction an eight. And with that in mind, what do you want to rate The Holdovers, which is currently at an eight?
It is at an eight. Obviously, I am not interested in rating this any lower than an eight.
Agreed.
I enjoyed this film enough to give it a nine. But I am happy with an eight.
Here's my problem, though.
Well, before you even say anything, if I rate this a nine, then I feel that it should be the best picture, because I just don't think there's anything... A nine.
Why I wanted,
yeah. Listen, I enjoyed.
That's why I wanted to rate Barbie 10.
No. Fuck no. We settled Barbie at an 8.
I know, but I wanted to rate it 10. Because I think it's going to win.
Fuck no. No. It's not going to win. Listen, I will make a gentlemanly bet with you.
How gentlemanly?
I don't know. How much money you want to put down?
I don't want to put money. We said gentlemanly.
Okay, then you come up with the terms.
Well, it'll have to be like challenge related.
Okay. Okay.
That's interesting.
Yeah, challenge related.
I'm gonna think about it.
You think about it.
We'll bring it to next week.
Yeah. Bring it to next week.
Anyway, my only concern is that we gave American Fiction an eight, and I really kind of feel the films are equal in style.
Let's go eight. I'm good with an eight. I just won't go lower than an eight.
But now I'm feeling guilty for giving American Fiction an eight, because now I feel like I want to give them both nine. But then I don't know. I'm going to go with eight with you, just because we set the precedent already with American Fiction.
I like this more than American Fiction.
Yeah, but is it because we're white?
No.
No. Well, let me just say this. I can probably relate more to the teenage character in this film than I can to anybody in American Fiction.
That's true.
But that's not nothing to do with race. That has more to do with just, you know, a teenage kid.
Yeah. No, of course. I mean,
but you know what I mean. I get it.
But it does have to do with race
because it's a white kid. So obviously, I mean, that's the thing. I'm just trying to make sure I'm not. I'm trying to make sure I'm not accidentally doing a racism.
You're not.
That's all.
All right.
I don't want to do a racism. No. I honestly don't want to do one.
No, it's not. Stop.
Okay. All right. Fine. They're both eight. I'm rating
they're
it.
They're both now. Eights. Either they're both eights or they're both nines.
Exactly.
I don't think either one is better than the other. I enjoyed this more. Doesn't mean that I wouldn't give American Fiction also a nine.
And I don't think either of them should be up for Best Picture. So that makes me want to. It makes me knock it down a bit more. Eight makes a lot more sense.
Eight is fine. I mean, listen, eight is a stellar score.
If it was the nine, I'd be like, it should be in the top five. So, no, yeah, eight it is.
Eight is good.
No guilt.
No guilt. No, of course not. Of course not. Now, I don't know what we're reviewing next week. Because your pairs... some films are still in theaters. I don't know if we're going to be able to get to theaters to see... to review films in the pairs... that you came up with, but there is only four movies left for us to do, and those movies are, let's see, it's Anatomy of a Fall, Killers of the Flower Moon, Poor Things, and The Zone of Interest. Right now, Zone of Interest, Poor Things, are only available in theaters. Whereas Anatomy of a Fall and Killers of the Flower Moon are out digitally. So we can absolutely see those two. So right,
here's a
we can go out of your pairing for next week.
Quick question for you.
Yeah, yeah.
So here's my question.
Here's your question.
Out of the two, between Poor Things and Zone of Interest, which one do you think is more likely to become available sooner?
Zone of Interest.
Then let's do what we paired with that, which would be Killers, correct? Or no?
I don't remember.
You don't remember?
I don't remember.
I thought you were keeping track of this stuff.
Listen, I have it in a text message on a yellow Post-it you took a picture of.
Yeah, so I thought it was now. So that was now it was your responsibility. You had the picture.
Oh, all right.
I didn't know I had to write it down somewhere. All right.
I'm finding the damn picture. It's right here. Yeah, here it is. Okay. Son of a bitch. Poor Things and Anatomy of a Fall. You put those together.
And that was right.
Zone of Interest and Killers of the Flower Moon.
So let's do Killers first. And then we'll hopefully by the time we do Killers, worst case scenario, we can do Killers with Anatomy.
Correct.
But let's hedge our bets and see.
We'll see what happens.
We'll hedge our bets. We'll play it by ear. But definitely Killers of the Moon no matter what.
No matter what.
All right.
All right. Perfect. All right.
I finally get the hate on that.
You saw that.
I got to watch it first, but I really feel like I'm not going to like it.
Oh, I thought you did watch it already.
No, I've been holding off on that, but I know Holly wants to see it, so we'll probably catch it this week. I don't know. I'm gonna see it.
We're gonna do it. All right.
Oh yeah.
Let's end this. All right, everybody.
End it.
Just end it. Go to our website at moviesucktastic.com. Download or listen to the show there. You can go to iTunes and you can download or you can listen to the show at iTunes. You can go to facebook.com/moviesucktastic and you can see whatever we post there, which is usually often enough. You can leave us voicemail at 908-514-4470. You can leave us email at themovieguys@moviesucktastic.com. You can download your favorite podcast player for any of your devices. Just do a search for Movie Sucktastic, or you can go to our website and you can download our player, which is moviesucktastic.com/mst.apk. You have any words of wisdom, Mr. Wilson?
I'm not drinking fucking Merlot!
That was his other movie. Sideways, which was also nominated for Best Picture.
It was either that or he's the mother love and Antichrist.
I'd love to have a beer with Paul Giamatti. I bet it'd be great.
No, wine, wine.
I have a feeling that Giamatti likes the beer.
All right.
I'm betting he does. I'm sure he likes wine too, but anyhow. All right, everybody. We will talk to you next week when we review two more Oscar films. Hope you can join us. Bye-bye.
Happy trails.